Welcome to The Credit Connection with High Tech Lending's David Brown, helping you get your finances in order and get you the credit you deserve. The Credit Connection, here on KSMA. Now, from High Tech Lending, David Brown.
Welcome to our show, The Credit Connection. I'm your host, David Brown, with High Tech Lending and American Senior Reverse Mortgage. At The Credit Connection, we want to connect you to the credit you want and deserve for your home, business, and personal use. Here we discuss all things creditworthy, such as lenders, FICO scores, interest rates, credit cards, mortgages. You name it, if it has to do with credit or money, we'll discuss all the aspects. Think of our show as a financial literacy class with different topics each week. Now, I want to give a shout out to Alice, who called this past week to let me know she enjoyed our show and services to the community. Well, I really like hearing nice things like that, Alice. We really appreciate your feedback and questions that relate to credit. I encourage you and others to ask questions through our website, reloans.com. Hit the Contact Us tab and leave your question and comment. You can also call us at 805-686-2321. In today's program, we'll share with some actual lending and credit scenarios and pull back the curtain regarding student loans made simple with Raul Aldama. Here's some current events affecting the credit markets and consumers today. I want you to know that if you're in a fire area, and our hearts go out to those that have had losses with the fires, and we want to shout out to the first responders and the firefighters that are working so hard. It does affect lending, and it affects it in such a way that because it's now a disaster area, the lenders have stopped all funding in those disaster areas until the fires are out and they can reassess those properties. And so if you're doing a refinance or a purchase or anything in those certain zip codes, heads up. It's been noted that the equities in your homes is as good as it's been in the last 25 years as far as your percent of equity to value. You know, if you have car loans or student loans or things that you want to do debt consolidation with, now might be a good time to consider that. And it's still viable, even though you might have a 3.5% 30-year fixed mortgage, you might want to consider if you're going to do a debt consolidation with the equity, it is worth it from a cash flow standpoint. You can still save hundreds of dollars a month. Okay, now for the green, or as we get to the fun part of today's program, and pull back the curtain on student loans and paying for higher education with Raul Aldama. Raul is a financial aid counselor at Allen Hancock College here in Santa Maria, and I want to welcome Raul for being our guest. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the niche of student loans. Or financial aid, I should say.
A friend of mine called me and said, why don't you apply for this financial aid job? And I said, well, I've really never done financial aid. And she said, well, just give it a try. And I applied, and out of all these many applications, over 200.
And you were telling me a little bit about your own background, how you're first generation to go to college and graduate, and now you have your master's as well. And I applaud you. I think that's great. Yeah, and now you have real-life experience because you had to finance that college as well. and three others, I understand, for your children.
That is correct. Yes, exactly.
Well, we're glad to have an expert here. I've paid for four college educations, and I know that the task associated with it. Tell me, most schools require a FAFSA application prior to any loans, grants, or scholarship. What is FAFSA, and when should I start on that form?
The FAFSA is an online form that allows the particular institution to determine financial need for that particular student. So most colleges require that, especially if they participate in the federal grants and loan programs. But they can also require the DREAM Act. So it's either the FAFSA or the DREAM Act. Both of them would determine eligibility for a student. And normally the time to apply would be October 1st of the year for the upcoming year. For instance, October 1st that just passed, 2018, for the year 2019-20.
Okay.
So the application process for the 19-20 award year, it were already opened up on October 1st.
And what do I need, or where What do I have to do to get ready or fill that form out? What kind of information is required?
You would need for sure your income tax information or wages. In this case, for the 1920 would be for the 2017 calendar year. And if you have that, either your tax return or if you received any other untaxed income like SSI, workers' comp, you know, whatever that may be that you receive, you need that information because the FAFSA is going to be asking you for all that information to enter into that application.
And it's an online application, so it's got password protected and all that kind of stuff.
That is correct.
How long is it going to take somebody to fill that out?
I would say if you've never done a FAFSA, it could take you up to 45 minutes to complete it. Definitely less than an hour.
Oh, okay. Okay. Now, does the student also have to fill one out, or is it just the parent?
It's got to be the student. In reality, the parent doesn't really complete the FAFSA. The parent helps the student complete the FAFSA because the FAFSA itself really is asking for questions for that student. Now, if the student is a dependent student, is going to be asking for parental information, income, okay, you know, all that information to be able to determine the eligibility for that particular student.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the FAFSA is that the cornerstone that they use or the benchmark for grants and...
Yes, it is. The federal government determines if the student is a U.S. citizen or legal resident, they would qualify for federal grants and programs, but also probably state funding. And if they do, they require the FAFSA to be able to determine the student's eligibility. Institutions always want to give the student the max they can get. And that is what they need. They need that calculation to make sure the student is not over-awarded and receives anything they need to continue their program.
What are the five biggest mistakes that people make on a FAFSA?
There's a number of them, but I'm going to say, you know, the top five. One of them is filling out the wrong FAFSA. You know, they want to go, let's say the student wants to start in summer of next year, 2019, but because they're the 17-18 FAFSA, it's available, they may want to complete that instead of the 18-19. I mean, instead of the 19-20. So that is one of the most common mistakes. Oftentimes, too, is transposing the Social Security numbers. They enter their information, and all of a sudden, they maybe don't have their Social Security number at hand, or they don't have it memorized, and they, you know, mistakenly enter somebody else's number. Also, legal name. Legal name is a big issue, and the federal government matches up your date of birth, your legal name, and your Social Security number to make sure you're a valid person, per se. Mm-hmm. And if some of those three elements is incorrect, the government is going to question that. They're going to say, is this a real person? You know, the information we have does not match with the Social Security Administration. Another one of the common mistakes would be entering their adjusted gross income when it's asked. They oftentimes guesstimate if they don't have their tax return, or they enter the prior year's AGI, adjusted gross income. So that is a mistake. You know, the FAFSA has to be completed accordingly. It has specific questions, and it asks for specific years, and we have to answer it accordingly. And I would say the next one would probably be marital status. You know, students, the FAFSA is really a snapshot in time. So if you're married at the time you're completing the FAFSA, or if your parents are married, you have to list them as married. Sometimes students make mistakes and, you know, maybe the parent was divorced, but they already got remarried a week ago and now they're still thinking they're divorced. So they list them as divorced when in fact they have remarried now.
I see. What are the biggest myths in financial aid for college?
There's a number of them, but one of them, and probably the most common one, would be I make too much money. You know,
really?
Oftentimes
okay.
Students and their parents think that they already have a lot of money that they made, and because of that, they don't qualify for anything.
So they don't try, or they don't?
They just don't try. They give up before they start. And if they never try, they'll never know exactly what they can get. Another one of the myths is that I am too old to get financial aid. You know, financial aid, especially federal financial aid, is not based on age. So right. A student or parent may want to go back to school and they don't want to do the FAFSA, or they think they don't qualify for it because maybe they're 40, 50, you know, even 60 years old. Age is not a factor in the FAFSA eligibility. It is the income and the resources the student has. Another one is ethnicity. You know, sometimes people think that they have to be from a particular ethnic group to qualify. And that's not really even a question on the FAFSA. Other times, students want to get a student loan and they think that because they have a bad credit, that they don't want to do the FAFSA because their credit is not good and therefore they may not qualify for that student loan. But in reality, student loans are not based on credit. Oftentimes, the students think that money that they receive is free money. In other words, there's no strings attached. And that's not correct. Students are liable for what they get. They have to make progress, academic progress. And if a student is not meeting minimum standards, they may be placed on warning or they may be placed on ineligibility status, therefore no longer being able to receive any federal aid when we talk about federal aid. And the state aid also has minimum requirements. So oftentimes, students sometimes don't think of that, but they are required to meet minimum standards.
How do I leverage academics, sports, and assets to receive maximum educational assistance regardless of my income?
There's a number of scholarships that are based on merit, not necessarily financial need. And those are the ones, if you think your income is too high or if you've already tried and based on your income, you don't qualify, definitely there you may want to look into particular merit scholarships. With that being said, you want to make sure you avoid any scholarship scams. You know, the minute that you go onto a site and start applying for a scholarship, if they're asking you for money, if they're asking you to enter your credit card information, you know definitely that's a scam.
Okay.
You don't really want to go for it. I mean, so far the ones I've encountered, they're not reliable sources. So I would say if you get into one of those websites and they start asking you for your credit card information,
right,
you know, get out of there. The application process should be for free if it's legitimate.
Okay.
Also, you want to probably have your student or yourself participate in extracurricular activities. In other words, many of the scholarships that are merit-based, they want to look and see what you're doing besides academics. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, if they're merit scholarships, they don't really care how much you make or where you are in that process, but they want to make sure that you actually have done something else in addition to academics. And the foundations, a number of foundations that are out there, you can search for those. And there's also a number of search engines you can enter your information so that they keep you posted as to what kind of scholarships there are out there that may not necessarily be income driven, but more base driven. And also, probably very, very important, make sure that your GPA, your CUM GPA, your grades are high, you know, or remain high, because many of the scholarships will be based on, you know, how you perform.
Right.
And if you're a good student, you know, your opportunity to receive more scholarships is there. But if you are not necessarily a good student, you know, the opportunities will be less.
Approximately how much does it cost now to go to college, to get a four-year degree?
That's a good question. It varies depending on where you go. For instance, community colleges, their cost of attendance is a lot less. As an example, if you are an independent student, meaning you don't live with your parents, you're over 24 years of age, you're either married or have children you support, if you are deemed to be independent, it can cost you, I want to say, between $18,000 to $20,000 a year.
Okay.
But that's including housing, room and board,
right,
you know, expenses, college educational expenses, everything you will need for that year. If you were to go, for instance, to a UC system, well, let's just take CSU. Any CSU university for your college is going to cost you more to go than a community college. And we're talking about, you know, maybe in the $29,000 per year.
Wow.
If you are looking at UC system, that's going to be a little higher, somewhat close to that, but slightly higher. And if you go to a private college, that might cost you up to $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 per year.
So when I hear in the blight of graduates that are now in debt to the tune of $90,000+, that's not insurmountable, I guess, and that's realistic.
Yeah,
over a four-year term,
it's not uncommon. However, you want to make sure probably that what you study and the program you choose. I mean, you're investing, you know, oftentimes when you get a student loans, it's an investment in your education.
Right.
And that hopefully that education will pay off. So it's not uncommon that students borrow money. We prefer that students don't borrow money at a community college only because it's a lot less expensive. And usually they have enough money to go, I mean, to to survive. But sometimes when they go to a four-year college, it could be more costly. Right. It could definitely be more expensive.
We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Raul with Allen Hancock College.
Mom, are you okay?
Honey, I'm fine. Just a broken glass.
Really? Are you okay?
I haven't been sleeping well since Dad, you know. I wake up at night worried if I can make ends meet.
Mom, why don't we look into a reverse mortgage? Then you won't have to make any more house payments and you can live comfortably.
Should I just call the guys on TV?
No, who knows where they're from? My neighbor recommended David Brown of American Senior. He'll come to the house and answer all our questions. Mom, call David at American Senior, okay? Here, I Googled the number, 686-2321.
686-2321.
All homeowners over 62, don't worry about your finances. Call 686-2321. 686-2321. Get a reverse mortgage with David Brown of American Senior. David Brown of American Senior, a division of High Tech Lending, licensed by the Department of Oversight under California Law Mortgage and Lending Act, NMLS 7147, CA 3413-0937.
Welcome back to the second part of our show, The Credit Connection. If you're just now joining us, we were discussing student loans and grants with Raul Aldama of Allen Hancock College. Raul, what are the different student loan types and unique features of each?
Sure. There is four type of loans, I would say. The first one I want to address is a direct subsidized loan.
Okay.
The direct subsidized loan is based on financial need. In other words, the student has to have some need for that. That's determined by the federal government, not by the student. And if they do have a need, the loan, just as it sounds, is subsidized by the federal government. With that being said, the interest is paid by the government as long as the student is attending college, when at least half time.
Okay.
So any interest that it accumulates over time for as many years as the student is in college is paid by the federal government. The student does not have to worry about the interest until after they graduate.
Okay.
The loan program will
give, and that's the subsidy, the lack
exactly.
of interest while they're still attending the university.
Yeah, the subsidy. This is how it works. The student enrolls, let's say, 6 units or more every semester or quarter. The minute that they graduate, the government will give them 6 months of a grace period.
Right.
The direct unsubsidized loan. And just like it sounds, it's not subsidized by the government. So the interest starts accruing the minute the student gets that loan. And the student is responsible for making payments on that interest every month for as long as it takes him to graduate and during repayment.
Okay.
Now, the student has the option to not pay that interest if they don't have the money, you know, if they don't have a job, if they're not able to pay it. But what's going to happen with the unsubsidized loan is that all that interest that's unpaid is going to add up.
Accrue
right. every month. And they will create two different accounts, one for the interest and one for the principal. The minute that the student graduates, the government is going to move all that interest that was unpaid mm-hmm. onto the principal.
Right.
So the new principal will be the original right. principal plus any added interest unpaid. And then they will give them interest on top of that. So that's called capitalization. Their base students will end up paying interest on top of interest.
Right.
If they don't pay the interest as it goes along.
What kind of interest rates are they talking about?
It's low ballpark. Interest rate. I want to say 3.25 on the average.
Really?
The federal government
is
has very low.
Fixed or adjusted? Or?
Right now it's fixed. In the past, we've gone through a number of changes. In the past, there were, they would change every so often. Some were variable. But this one's the ones we have right now, we've had from the last years, mm-hmm. have been the same interest rate for that particular year.
Okay, so subsidized and unsubsidized.
In addition to that, we have something called the Direct Plus Loan. And the Direct Plus Loan is not per se a student loan for undergraduate students. It's a loan that the parents will borrow, you know, they will take out. And the student is not responsible to make payments on the plus. The parents are responsible.
Okay.
And the beauty is that the money is there, you know, can be used if needed. The downside of that is that approximately 60 days after the plus loan kicks in, the parent has to start making payments on that loan. So they don't wait until the student graduates. The parent has to make the payments as they go.
Okay.
And the interest is slightly higher. And the parent has to have, it's based on credit, but it has to not have negative credit. If the parent doesn't have negative credit, but average credit or good credit, they'll get this particular loan. And it's, you know, like I said, it could be a good loan, but it just depends. You know, some parents like to borrow, some don't. Besides the PLUS loan, we have private loans. Private loans, usually their interest is much, much higher. Usually they don't carry a grace period or they don't carry any, you know, deferment process. It just depends. There's a number of them out there.
There's institutions that make those? Or
usually lenders.
Or Uncle Guido.
Yeah. Usually it will be lenders, you know. I won't mention lenders out there, but there was a number of lenders and lending institutions that will provide students with private loans. But usually their interest rate would be higher. And they would have to be paid as they're given. You know, they give them an opportunity to pay them on a scheduled basis, but they still have to be paid.
So if I were to guess, I would assume that the subsidized loan is probably the most popular or desirable.
Exactly. It is because of the features that it has and because it allows a student to graduate and the government pays the interest while the student is enrolled.
Let's say I've had a student loan for a number of years. Is it a good time or to consolidate those or refinance the student debt?
Let me tell you what consolidation is. Consolidation basically is, let's say that you have a number of loans. You have a sub, a non-sub. Maybe you took some of those loans a while back ago. So some of them are new loans with the current interest rate, maybe 3.25. Some of them are old loans that you had in the past, the interest may be 5, 6, or 7. When you consolidate all those loans, they give you a weighted average. So it could be lower than what you got them for initially. So that would be a plus for you. Because it's a weighted average, it could be a little higher than the current loans. But again, you know, you will be able to merge all these loans into one, consolidate it, make one single payment, you know, maybe in a 10-year, 15, or 20-year repayment. But have them all consolidated. The beauty of consolidation is that you will not have any loan out there that you missed. You know, sometimes students consolidate their loans and they forget, oh, I had this other loan that I forgot had a Perkins.
Student loans aren't forgivable and they're not, you can't have them excluded from bankruptcy either.
That is correct. That is correct. And the beauty of that is that you can merge them all into one and consolidate your loan debt into one source and make one single payment.
Okay, good.
Now, when you actually refinance the loan, it's a little different. You know, you can refinance private loans with FFELP loans, direct loans, federal loans. So you can mix apples and oranges. But usually, you know, you may not get the best deal. It just depends on, you know, on what you're refinancing. And the best approach would always be, look at calculations and see where you're going to be paying the less interest and the less payments.
Okay.
You know, to save money just overall.
Financial smart.
Exactly.
Well, right now I see a lot of kids doing their tours and looking at colleges and so forth. Does college admissions look at my financial ability in any way when I'm making that application to Yale versus City College?
Yeah, most colleges don't. And I would say it's not ethical, but there may be some private colleges or some colleges out there that I'm not aware of that might. But usually colleges really don't look at the financial piece. They really concentrate on the student at hand and whether or not the student is going to be successful in their program and looking at what the student has done in the past. So financial aid, although it's helpful and it will help the student, is not necessarily a piece that the admissions office looks at.
Okay.
I would say that for most colleges.
Good. What resources are available to the financial aid process? Should they go to the financial aid office or is it just a Google search? I don't know.
Well, once a student knows what college they're going to be attending or they've applied to, they probably want to definitely either physically go to the financial aid office or virtually go into the virtual financial aid office of the college that they're attending or they will be attending to make sure the file is complete.
Yeah.
You know, oftentimes the students fill out the FAFSA and they think that's all there is,
right,
and then they forget.
Okay.
To do, you know, X, Y, and Z. The FAFSA is just like a credit report. It's really not the entire application.
Get started. Mm-hmm. Real quick. What's the most comical story that you've had in your financial aid endeavors?
One time, a parent came to my office and said, "Do I need to be Hispanic to get financial aid?" And I said,
"Why? Were they not Hispanic?"
Yeah, they were not Hispanic. And, okay. You know, it's just that assumption that certain groups receive certain benefits. Right. And I think it works both ways, you know.
And that's one of the myths you said earlier.
Exactly.
And how did that end?
I explained to them that ethnicity or, you know, it really, a race has nothing to do with financial aid, especially federal financial aid, that the government looks at their income and resources that the student has. So, you know, she understood what that was.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Well, how can our listeners reach you? Either mail or email or phone?
They can always visit our website if they have any questions. Okay. And we have a number of resources on our website. And that website is honkacollege.edu. They can also, if they're going to a particular institution and they know that it's not Allan Hancock, usually maybe whatever that may be, UCSB, Cal Poly, or anywhere else, visit their website. Make sure they work closely with them.
Mm-hmm. Good. Roel, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and giving us your insights about financial aid and student loans. And I'm sure that there'll be a lot more information coming forth. And we sure appreciate you being here today.
You're very welcome. It was my pleasure.
Thank you. Once again, we're out of time. Every week, we endeavor to earn your trust and provide valuable information that makes a difference to your bottom line. If you agree, please share our message with your other friends and family. If you missed one of our value-packed radio shows, we are now posting previous shows on our website, reloans.com. For questions and comments about this show or other credit questions, go to our website, reloans.com, and click Contact Us or call us at 805-686-2321. Leave your questions and we will get to them on our next show or contact you directly. Thank you for tuning into the Credit Connection, where we do the work and you get the credit. I'm your host, David Brown, from High Tech Lending and American Senior Reverse Mortgage. See you next week with another interesting Credit Connection topic.
You've been listening to The Credit Connection with David Brown from High Tech Lending. For more information, contact David Brown directly at 805-686-2321. That's 805-686-2321. Or by email at dbrown@hightechlending.com. dbrown@hightechlending.com. And visit David online at reloans.com. That's reloans.com. And tune in next time for High Tech Lending's David Brown and The Credit Connection here on KSMA.